Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. Newly released voting figures in America show 33 million voters have already cast their ballots for the next president, offering analysts tantalizing clues to who might have the advantage in an increasingly tight contest.
I think that this may never have been a 7-8-9 point race in Clinton's favor. I think it maybe has settled into a 3 or 4 point race in Clinton's favor, which is still good enough. And Clinton appears to be leading in more than enough states to get over 270 electoral votes. There is some added uncertainty in this election, maybe a little bit more than at this point in 2012. But in some ways, they're similar kinds of races.
Both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are campaigning heavily in the states where the polls have the outcome too close to call. Trump told supporters in North Carolina Saturday that he will win big on Tuesday. Clinton has withheld making a prediction, but a recent poll has her with a slight edge over Trump nationally. Meantime, as Americans head to the polls to elect the new president, federal authorities are warning officials in New York, Texas, and Virginia about unspecified threats from Al-Qaeda around Election Day. Authorities sent notices to local and state officials to alert them to the new information. Nigerian army officials say government troops have rescued one of the Chibok schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram Islamic extremists more than 2 years ago. A military spokesman said Saturday the girl was found late Friday carrying a baby boy in Borno State by troops who were screening escapees from a Boko Haram base. The government has vowed to secure the release of nearly 200 girls who remain captive. This is VOA News. Authorities in Somalia say a suicide car bomber rammed a security checkpoint near the parliament building in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, Saturday, killing at least 3 people and wounding 6 others. An official of the Mogadishu administration says the suicide bomber was apparently targeting a security convoy which returned from a routine night patrol. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack, but it has the hallmarks of Al-Shabaab, Al-Qaeda affiliate group. A Turkish court is reported to have ordered the arrest Saturday of 9 executives and journalists of the opposition newspaper before their trial in a case that has sparked international concern about freedom of expression in Turkey. They are charged with links to Kurdish militants and the group blamed for the July 15th coup attempt. It is the latest in the ongoing political crisis in Turkey that has raised international concern. On Friday, the United States joined other countries, including France, Germany, Britain, and the United Nations, in expressing concern about Turkey's arrest of pro-Kurdish politicians and the throttling of the Internet. Hours after the roundup, a car bomb killed 9 people, wounded more than 100 others near a police station in the southeastern Turkish city of Diyarbakir, where some of the lawmakers were being held. As Iraqi forces continue to move deeper into the Islamic State stronghold in Mosul, the UN Human Rights Office said the militants are increasing mass killings and abductions of civilians to use as human shields. Lisa Schlein reports.
The Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights says Islamic State militants are continuing to forcibly transfer civilians to the city of Mosul and its outskirts to shield themselves from airstrikes. Over the past few days, it says about 2,500 civilians were abducted from the town of Hammam al-Alil, with some people being told they would be transported to Syria. The agency says it also continues to receive reports of mass killings. Human rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says IS has been forcibly recruiting very young children to fight in Mosul since the Iraqi government operation to retake the city began October 17th. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The president of Indonesia has canceled a trip to Australia after a massive rally against a Christian governor accused of insulting Islam turned deadly in Jakarta, Indonesia's capital. One person was killed and at least dozens more injured in the violence Friday. 10 people were arrested. The protest was mounted against the Jakarta governor, who is said to have joked to an audience about a passage in the Quran that could be interpreted as prohibiting Muslims from accepting non-Muslims as leaders. More news at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Michael Brown in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga. Peter Klote is on assignment.
Up to 4 million people, a third of the population in South Sudan, are severely food insecure, meaning a third of the country doesn't know where the next meal is coming from.
UN agencies concerned about a humanitarian crisis in South Sudan as famine looms.
Every year around about this time, we see the same thing, where they say they're going to withdraw, but then they never actually do it. Namibia did it last year. Kenya's been talking about it for years. Uganda's spoken about it as well.
How serious is the threat of African countries to pull out of ICC? Is this the end for the ICC in Africa?
There's some folk-leaning songs on the new album, but it's neither one or the other. We're trying to do something different. We like it when people can't pin it down and say what it is.
And South African born members of the alternative rock band make a mark on radio and television across the United States. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. UN aid agencies warn the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan, already one of the biggest in the world, is getting worse as famine looms and growing numbers of refugees flee to neighboring countries. Lisa Schrein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The World Food Programme reports a 38-truck convoy carrying food for about 1 month arrived in the South Sudanese town of Yei on Friday. The agency says the food and other relief supplies will be a lifesaver for thousands of families who have been trapped in the area for 4 months because of fighting and insecurity. WFP spokeswoman Bettina Lucia says thousands of people in Yei and throughout South Sudan are fleeing intensified violence that stems from the country's nearly three-year conflict. She says they have been forced to leave their crops to rot in the field, adding to a growing problem of hunger.
Up to 4 million people, a third of the population in South Sudan, are severely food insecure, meaning a third of the country doesn't know where the next meal is coming from. The malnutrition is above emergency levels in 7 of the 10 states, nearly twice of the emergency threshold in 2 states. We are very concerned that the threat of famine is very real, that it could happen.
Lucia says humanitarian agencies have helped to stave off catastrophe so far, but she says funds to carry out life-saving operations are running out. She says WFP urgently needs $113 million for operations through January. In the meantime, the United Nations Refugee Agency reports the number of people fleeing South Sudan continues to grow. Last month, it says an average of 3,500 people fled to neighboring countries each day. UNHCR spokeswoman Cecile Pouilly says 9 out of 10 refugees are women and children, with most of the outflow, around 2,400 per day, arriving in Uganda.
Most of the arrivals are from equatorial regions, and they report armed groups harassing civilians, killings, torturing people suspected of supporting opposition factions, burning villages, and sexually abusing women and girls.
In recent weeks, says Puyi, refugees have increasingly used informal border crossing points, reportedly because armed groups are preventing them from using main roads. She says many have been forced to walk through the bush for days without food or water. The UNHCR says it is scaling up its operations in Uganda and in the other countries of asylum, Ethiopia, Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, to keep pace with the growing refugee exodus from South Sudan. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Days after dismantling the so-called jungle in Calais, French police have cleared another migrant tent camp, this time in northeastern Paris, busing nearly 4,000 Afghans and Africans to temporary shelters. Lisha Brandt was there and has this report for VOA.
Hundreds of young men waited in the cold and rain Friday morning to be bussed out of the Stalingrad neighborhood of northeastern Paris. Like everyone else here, 23-year-old Dawit Negash from Ethiopia has no idea of his final destination.
We don't know still. Maybe outside Paris, maybe in Paris, we don't know. I need to stay here and I hope to live here.
Nearby, 30-year-old Mohammed stands with a group of friends. He says he's from Darfur, Sudan.
شهر واحد. شهر
سبتمبر.
أيوة.
في باريس.
أيوة في باريس.
He says he's been here for a month. He left his conflict-torn region because of what he calls problems. Police stand in front of a line of buses, telling the migrants to sit down as they wait to be transported. Authorities are moving them to temporary shelters, where those who want can apply for asylum. Tent camps spring up regularly around the city, underscoring the enduring nature of the migrant crisis, not just in France, but across Europe. This one ballooned in recent days with the arrival of hundreds of migrants from Calais. Neighborhood associations have been giving the migrants food and teaching them some French. One woman, Mireille, says it's important to help the migrants until a local shelter opens up. She joined the other volunteers collecting the discarded tents for washing, certain that before long, more migrants will be arriving. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Meanwhile, here in the U.S., it's just days before the election and both candidates are fanning out shore up support in battleground states. And in small and large counties across the U.S., local offices are gearing up for the final push to Election Day. Jeff Swicott takes a look at Democratic and Republican activities in two counties near Washington, D.C.
There are a few undecided voters left. So the focus of both campaigns is to motivate less enthusiastic supporters to get out and vote. Matt Gammon is a campaign strategist with WPA Research in Washington, D.C.
Really what you're looking at is a lot of folks who are on the fence or maybe have already made up their mind, but you're not sure if they're going to vote or they haven't made up their mind strongly for one candidate or another.
At the Anne Arundel County Republican Party in Pasadena, Maryland, volunteers are gearing up to turn out voters.
A waving a rally sign.
County coordinator Faith Loudon has prepared shopping bags full of materials for precinct leaders to take to the polls. She says informing voters about Republicans down the ballot is critical.
Usually when people go to the polls, I'd say sometimes as much as 30% of the people can have their mind changed by a positive person waving and greeting them at the polling place.
Gone are the days of large rooms full of phone banks calling people to get out the vote. Facebook now plays a larger role.
So here is one that we put up earlier.
Jerry Cave with the Montgomery County GOP says phone banks can reach thousands of people, but with Facebook, campaigns can reach millions.
This provides us an opportunity to energize our people to get out the vote, and it's working, as you can see, because in the early voting in Maryland, on the first day of early voting, Maryland had 62% more people vote that day than they did 4 years ago.
At a meeting of the Arlington County, Virginia Democratic Committee, attendees are signing up people to greet voters at the polls. Democrats are taking a slightly different approach in the final days. Phones and social media are important, but Democrats are knocking on every registered voter's door in the county right up to Election Day, Tuesday. Congressman Don Beyer, who represents Arlington County, is running for re-election.
Arlington will also do a good job all day Tuesday of looking at who hasn't come to the polls yet. And right up till 7 o'clock that night, they'll be still calling people and knocking on people's doors to make sure that every possible person can get out and be part of this.
According to estimates, early voting is greater than the record pace set 4 years ago. Jeff Swicord, VOA News, Washington.
And now on to Cameroon, where Cameroon has seen rising tensions this year between local workers and Chinese companies, Workers on two Chinese-led road projects are currently on strike, demanding better pay and working conditions. The government is trying to mediate the crisis, which has led to violent confrontations. For VOA Moki, Edwin Kinzika has the story from Mantomb, Cameroon.
The striking workers drummed like this all night for two nights. They work for the China First Highway Engineering Company in Matom, some 80 kilometers to the south of the capital Yaoundé. Union leader and strike organizer Wan Yu Leonard says they decided their Chinese supervisors shouldn't sleep until the workers' demand were heard.
We are not well paid. Our categories are not respected. And our allowances, like housing allowance, lodging, feeding, and also transport, none of that is respected. Can you imagine that on a project like this one? It is not normal.
Leonard says two-thirds of the 200 people working with the company do not have formal contract agreements. The company is building a 250-kilometer road linking Yaoundé with the country's commercial capital, Douala. The strike has now spread to a second Chinese company building a road linking the capital to the airport. Aman Balakok is an engineer on strike.
Nous réclamons un directeur de ressources humaines camerounais.
He says they want a Cameroonian to be appointed to head the Department of Human Resources as spelled out in the Cameroon Labour Code and as recommended by Cameroon authorities before the contract to construct the road was signed. He says they also want all their advantages to be respected as spelled out in the collective labour contracts they signed with the Chinese company. 4 days into the strike, the government called a crisis meeting, but the workers refused negotiations without their Chinese supervisors present. Some Chinese staff left the work site after violent confrontations. Several local workers were injured when police intervened. Several striking workers have been arrested and the company offices have been sealed. This is not the first time Chinese have faced problems in Cameroon this year. In March, miners in the eastern town of Betari Oya forced out Chinese gold mining operations they said had taken their livelihoods and were not living up to promises to develop the locality, something the Chinese companies disputed. Angry locals slashed tires, vandalized equipment and beat up some Chinese miners. Last month, Cameroon deployed its navy to seize illegal fishing vessels in the Atlantic Ocean, many of them Chinese, according to authorities. Tensions had been rising with locals who say foreign trawlers are overfishing for export, raising prices at local markets. The Chinese embassy did not respond to requests for comment on this story. But China's ambassador, Wei Wenxiao, spoke about Chinese companies in Cameroon during a ceremony last month. He spoke through a French interpreter. He says Chinese working in Cameroon have always accomplished their task diligently in all aspects, including health and infrastructure building in towns and in the countryside, and he is satisfied with their work. Cameroon's Minister of Public Works, Emmanuel Nganou Djoumissi, is organizing the talks on the road workers' strike.
Je dois avouer que les entreprises se conforment.
He says he has talked with the Chinese companies. He says they are struggling to meet deadlines and facing problems related to late disbursements of funds and some administrative bottlenecks in the compensation of people to be displaced before roads are constructed. Djoumissi told VOA that Cameroon is eager to work with international partners of all nationalities. But he said the government will stop the contracts of any companies found to be violating the terms of those deals. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Matomb, Cameroon.
3 African countries say they are pulling out of the International Criminal Court, but don't prepare for a mass exodus just yet. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig speaks to legal experts who say more countries appear to be serious in their threats to withdraw, but they don't see this as the end for the ICC in Africa.
South Africa and Burundi have sent letters of intent to withdraw from the International Criminal Court to the UN Secretary General, with Gambia saying it will do the same. But these threats have been going on for some time, says Angela Mudukuti, international criminal justice lawyer at the Southern Africa Litigation Center.
Every year around about this time, we see the same thing, where states say they're going to withdraw, but then they never actually do it. Namibia did it last year. Kenya's been talking about it for years. Uganda's spoken about it as well. There are various states that have threatened to leave the ICC but never actually done anything. But now that someone has actually started the process, it is a different ballgame, and we could see more.
African leaders have long decried a perceived bias by the court, arguing they are being unfairly targeted. The court has served a warrant for the arrest of Sudan's president, Omar al-Bashir, who is wanted for war crimes and crimes against humanity. Kenya's president, Uhuru Kenyatta, and his now deputy, William Ruto, were accused of crimes against humanity connected to 2007 and 2008 post-election violence, although the charges were subsequently withdrawn. All but one of the 10 investigations by the ICC have taken place in African countries.
The critical question comes to your mind, why other atrocities around the world are not brought to the attention of ICC, why the focus is only on Africa. So this is a question which attracts a discussion.
That was John Seka, president of the Tanganyika Law Society in Tanzania. He says that he believes an African court, such as the Arusha-based African Court on Human and People's Rights, would be a better option than the ICC. But Kenyan international law expert and University of Nairobi lecturer Herman Manyora disagrees, saying he does not believe that an African court can supplant the ICC.
For now, no. It can't work. It can't work. Africa is home to impunity. The lords of impunity cannot be expected to come up with a court of justice that can try the very same people who are the perpetrators with impunity.
Manyora argues that more progressive forces are coming into leadership positions, and they don't like the impunity.
You know, they are beginning to take government. Buhari is in Nigeria. There are others elsewhere. And I don't think it's a static situation to say those with the agenda to leave will remain in power. So I don't think Africa will live en masse. It's not possible.
Tanzania's Seka agrees.
I'm not envisioning a dead ICC in the next years. I think it will continue to exist for quite a while, and it will be with us for more time to come.
Mudukuti says that state parties have the power to amend the Rome Statute, so they should instead work to fix the problems, not leave.
And states that have signed up to the Rome Statute have the capacity and the potential to affect change from inside. But once you leave the system, there's nothing you can do about it.
South Africa, Burundi, and Gambia are planning to leave anyway. The question now is, will other African nations follow? Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Thanks, Jill. Now, America's Rolling Stone music magazine says they sound like a Balkan accordionist, a Burundian drummer, an American slide guitarist, and a British rock star walking into a bar to play high-octane folk pop. The members of the alternative rock band, Congos, are currently making their presence felt on radio and television across the United States. But not many there know that the 4 Congo brothers were actually born in South Africa. They moved to Phoenix, Arizona as children in 1996. Johnny is the vocalist and also plays accordion and keyboards. Then there is drummer Jesse, lead guitarist Danny, and bass player Dylan. For VOA, Darren Taylor reports in this second part of a series on South African artists making an impact on the music world.
Congo's latest record, Egomaniac, is a hard-hitting mix of influences, including rock, pop, and folk music. It even uses the syncopated rhythms usually associated more with electronica and hip-hop. The World Would Run Better is the first single and a scathing criticism of celebrities who think they know it all.
That's probably, for me, the most pop-leaning song. It's kind of straightforward. It's got this very immediate hook and chorus to it.
Bassist Dylan Kongos says he and his brothers try to write music that can't be compared with that of other bands.
I definitely think there are some pop-leaning songs on the new album. There are some folk-leaning songs on the new album, but it's neither one or the other. We're trying to do something different. We like it when people can't pin it down and say what it is. But it's so hard to sign my own
surrender, so hard to do what I've intended. On some tracks, like Repeat After Me, the group play their instruments using different time signatures, enhancing the album's unusual offbeat sound.
Johnny's doing this kind of spoken rap almost over this bass of 7/4, which is, it just creates this very weird loop, like a long loop, a little bit hypnotizing.
Dylan maintains that Kongo's ultimate aim is to write powerful songs that last for generations.
We definitely try to just write good songs, and then when we get into the studio with the production and the arrangement of the songs, that's when we try to do some experimental things with the songs we've written in terms of sound and production. Come back to bed, you said,
but it wasn't warm. Far away with your back turned when I wake up. Electronic wizardry abounds on Egomaniac. Dylan says Kongos used a lot of synthesizers on the album to push the boundaries of sonic experimentation even further.
Layered guitars, layered vocals, layered drums, especially on the singles and the songs that are kind of more in your face. Take It From Me, Autocorrect It, you know. To give it this big, huge drumming sound and an African drumming sound.
Dylan says using traditional rock, folk and pop instruments and then computer trickery makes Egomaniac sound both modern and retro. No matter how many adventures Kongos embark upon with new instrumentation, the accordion, widely used in music from their birthplace, South Africa, remains central to its sound.
I think even subconsciously, everyone likes the sound of the accordion. It's a reeded instrument, so there's something vibrating differently that they're not used to.
Dylan says South Africa will always mean a lot to him and his brothers.
It's a place we'll always come back and visit, always come back and play shows to. You know, like even though we spent a short period of time there, living there initially, which was only 8 years, it kind of gets into your blood and, you know, never leaves.
Kongos recently performed at Opikopi, South Africa's biggest music festival.
3 days out in the bush, you know, like the heat and then the cold at night is just a really interesting and special experience. The energy from the crowds is something that isn't matched by people in the Northern Hemisphere.
But it's America and Europe that Kongos are presently conquering on a seemingly endless tour, their music used in Hollywood films and resonating across international music charts. As Dylan Kongos puts it, their South African childhood, as precious as it will always be to them, now seems like a separate universe. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg. Anyway.
This is Nightline Africa, and coming up in the second half of the program, Saturday Music Spot from our collection of music from across the continent. Yes, yes, yes. How about that? That's our music from Africa. Please enjoy.
Woman, correct. mama to bina valinga eh butu ya lelo ana yo to ko sukala mekele oya baba lumegu mama eh ekelebe mate belumegu bebe aku bebe ekelebe oya baba lumegu mama eh ekelebe mate belumegu yo 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 ekelebe if you get your ilaga make sure she know say you love her.
Yeah.
burning number. I want to love you, baby. I love you, baby. So I want to love you, baby. So make you dance for me. I want to love you, baby. I love you, baby. So I want to love you, baby. So make you dance for me. I want to kiss and hold you, baby. Hold you, baby. So I want to kiss and hold you, baby. So make you wine for me. I want to kiss and hold you, baby. Hold you, baby. So I want to kiss and hold you, baby. So make you wine for me. Hey, dance for me. Mommy, dance for me. Mommy, dance for me. Mommy, dance for me. Oh, dance for me. Mommy, dance for me. Mommy, dance for me. Mommy, dance for me. Oh, wine for me. Mommy, wine for me. Mommy, wine for me. Mommy, wine for me. Oh, wine for me. Mommy, wine for me. Mommy, wine for me. Mommy, wine for me.
Tu sais le faire, oui, bon, ça l'amour. Nana bi yo yo salama de basala ka mi kunzi bato bakana system na mécanisme de salami ina ina
fadi madi se
waka
he say fadi madi se
waka ndo ndo
he say ichola madi ri
waka e buka mi
fadi madi se
waka
I want to love you, baby. I love you, baby. So I want to love you, baby. So make you dance for me. I want to love you, baby. I love you, baby. So I want to love you, baby. So make you dance for me. I want to kiss and hold you, baby. Hold you, baby. So I want to kiss and hold you, baby. So make you wine for me. I want to kiss and hold you, baby. Hold you, baby. So I want to kiss and hold you, baby. So make you wine for me. Hey, dance for me. Mommy, dance for me. Mommy, dance for me. Mommy, dance for me. Oh, dance for me. Mommy, dance for me.
Yeah. person be me dead body. Nobody be the baby. When you fall, you go stand up again. You try him again and again and again. Cause it's not easy, yeah. To the singer, they dance and the people, they rejoice, yeah. My brother, my sister, don't be today. If we could do a party, yeah, make we the tango, yeah. Baba God, now your hand will be, yeah. Bring it back. Make una serious, yeah. Why? For na business, yeah. I make with the threat to the riches, yeah. Why? Cause you know easy, yeah. Even if you don't get money, yeah. They call it a shit body. Cause the way you defect the complaint, yeah. If you know be God way, yeah. That's when we be dead body, yeah. Nobody be no baby. And when you fall, you go stand up again. You try him again, again and again and again. Cause you know easy, yeah. They sing and they dance and the people they rejoice, yeah. Oh, oh, oh. My brother, my sister, don't be today. Oh, oh, oh. If we could do a party, yeah, make we the tango, yeah. Baba God, now your hand will be, yeah. I say, hey, you know, easy, yeah. Oh, oh, oh. To the sing and they dance and the people they rejoice, yeah. Oh, oh, oh. My brother, my sister, don't be today. Oh, oh, oh. If we could do a party, yeah, make we the tango, yeah. My God, now your hand will be. You know easy, yeah. You know easy, yeah. My brothers and sisters, you know easy, yeah. You know easy, yeah. You know, yeah. Even if you don't get money, you know easy, yeah. You sing and the dance, you talk less of the shake body. You know easy, yeah. Now your hand will be, yeah. Now your hand will be, yeah. My God, now your hand will be, yeah. Leadership body. Now your hand work, yeah.
You already know all that I eat again. You already know is the things again. Oh, you are teasing, yeah. Shanties, na na na, yeah. Come on, Lord. Girl, you carry over, Lord. I'll fight, girl, no be so. Cause my pocket heavy, oh. Sissy, come on, Lord. Girl, you carry over, Lord. I'll fight, girl, no be so. Cause my pocket heavy. Take it, baby, receive it. I take it, receive it. I take it, baby, receive it. And it's not. Want to tell you a story, story, oh. But this girl we are made for party. When you want to take it slow. Yes, she says she wants your money. But I tell her no, be so. But I got a plenty, though. Oh, oh, oh. Girl, you know, you know. No, no, girl, you know, you know, you know, you know, you know, no, no. I see you get down from front and back, yeah, and you yeah. Sexy from head to toe, yeah. Baby, Bambi, no use me show, oh, oh, oh.
Yes, that was our Saturday Music Spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. From the rest of the team, Nightline Africa team, we thank you for joining us tonight, and I hope you join us again tomorrow Sunday. I'm Douglas Mpoga.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has been re-elected to the United Nations Human Rights Council. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry thanked the General Assembly for its support and pledged to continue to work with the international community to address urgent human rights concerns. U.S. engagement has helped transform the Council into a more balanced and credible organization and has helped focus the global spotlight on grave violations and abuses of human rights around the world. Since the U.S. joined the Council in 2009, it has created commissions of inquiry for Syria, North Korea, and Burundi, adopted country-specific resolutions on Sri Lanka, Iran, and Burma, passed groundbreaking resolutions promoting and protecting the rights of freedom of assembly and association, and created an independent expert on violence and discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The Human Rights Council was established in 2006 to replace the 60-year-old UN Commission on Human Rights. The Council's 47 members are elected individually by an absolute majority of the 193 members of the General Assembly through secret ballot. Members of the Human Rights Council serve for a 3-year renewable term and cannot seek immediate re-election after 2 consecutive terms. The Council membership is based on equitable geographical distribution. As with all fora, the Human Rights Council is only as strong as its members, said Secretary Kerry, and I encourage all countries that respect human rights to be steadfast in their pursuit of a seat on the Human Rights Council. While important challenges remain, including ending the Council's excessive and biased focus on Israel, said Secretary Kerry, we look forward to cooperating with other Council members to address human rights concerns, advance human rights around the world, and ensure the Council fully realizes its purpose.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.